on the back of his bedroom door, pretending to be a matador. Paolo, with the children's book Father Christmas, sitting naked at her kitchen table with a glass of milk and a milk mustache, delighted by the grumpy Santa Claus. Paolo, asleep next to her, his face pale and trusting in the day's first light, the soft light that came in over the gulf just before sunrise. But the thought that might have made her smile, if it was in a book, was, just like the fucking Godfather. Like this. An Italian restaurant called Gino's, with the full Italian cliché stage setting, Siena orange walls, bottles of Chianti with straw wrappers, red and white checked tablecloths, baskets of hot crusty bread as soon as you sat down, the room smelling of sugar and wheat, olives and peppers, and black oily coffee. A few rickety tables outside faced the Plaza de Arbolis and the 50s tourist-coordinated stucco church across the way, San Fernando de something or other. The church belfry contained a loudspeaker that played a full, slow bell version of the singing nun's Dominique, more or less at noon, depending on whose turn it was to drop the needle on the aging vinyl bell record. Paolo took her to lunch almost every day, picking her up at the hotel where she worked as a bookkeeper. They'd eat Mexican one day, California or French the next, Italian twice a week. He picked her up about noon, so on most days she could hear, near or far, the recorded bells of San Fernando's. Gino's was the favored spot. Despite the cliched Italian stage setting, there was an actual Gino cooking at Gino's, and the food was terrific. Paolo would pick her up in a black BMW 740iL, his business car, with his smooth-faced business driver. They'd hook up with friends, eat a long Caribbean lunch, and laugh and argue and talk politics and cars and boats and sex, and at 2 o'clock or so, they'd all head back to work. A pattern. Not predictable to the minute, but predictable enough. Israel Cohn sat up in the choir loft at the back of the church with his rifle, a scoped Remington Model 700 in .30-06. He'd sighted it in along a dirt track west of town, zeroed at exactly 60 yards, the distance he'd be shooting across the Plaza de Arbolis. There was no problem making the shot. If all you wanted was that Izzy Cohn make a 60-yard shot with a scoped Remington 700, you could specify which shirt button you wanted the slug to punch through. Not that everything was perfect. The moron who'd bought the gun apparently thought that bigger was better, so Izzy would be shooting at 60 yards through an 8-power scope, and about all he could see was a shirt button. He would have preferred no magnification at all, or an adjustable 2-to-6-power scope to give him a little room around the crosshairs. But he didn't have that, and would have to make do. The problem with the scope was exacerbated by the humidity in the loft. Not only was the temperature somewhere in the 120s, he thought, but the humidity must have been 95%. He'd sweated through his shirt at his armpits and across his chest, and the sweat beaded on his cheeks and forehead and arms. When he put the rifle to his cheek, the scope fogged over in a matter of seconds. He had a bottle of spring water with him, and that helped keep his body cool enough to function, but there was nothing he could do about the fogging eyepiece. The shot would have to be a quick one. No matter. He'd scouted the play for 3 days. He knew what the conditions would be, and he was ready. Up high with a rifle, yellow vinyl kitchen gloves protecting against the inadvertent fingerprint, the jeans and thin long-sleeved shirt meant to guard against DNA traces. Izzy was good. He'd been in the loft for 1 hour and 10 minutes when he saw the 740iL ease around the corner. He had 2 identical Motorola walkie-talkies sitting next to his feet. Izzy believed in redundancy. He picked up the first walkie-talkie.